Hello, everyone, and good afternoon, Buenos Aires time. Welcome to all of you, councillors, ICANN staff, participants. Very warm welcome to ICANN 48 and to the GNSO Council meeting today, Wednesday, 20th of November. And just a reminder that this is one of two public meetings that the Council is holding. We'll welcome participation. Okay, we can deal with that. Just one moment. So we commence with item one on the agenda, which is to take a roll call of councillors present. Glenn, if I could ask you to take the roll call, please.
I'll do that, Jonathan. Jeff Newman.
Present.
Ching Chow.
Present.
Jonathan Robinson.
Present.
Mason Cole.
Present.
Joaf Kieran.
Present.
Volker Greiman.
Present.
Thomas Rickett.
Present.
Zaid Jamil.
Present.
John Berard.
I'm here.
Brian Winterfeld.
Present.
Peter Rindforth.
Present.
Oswaldo Nuova.
Present.
Wolf Ulrich Knoben.
I'm here.
Maria Farrell.
Present.
Wendy Seltzer.
Here.
David Cake.
Present.
Magali Pazello. Magali. Joy, are you on the phone? Is Joy on the phone? Good. Thank you. Yes, we can. Thank you, Joy. And can I also note that in case there are any connectivity issues, you have given your proxy to David Cake. And we have not got our councillor Wolfgang Kleinbechte anymore, but we have got our new councillor Klaus Stoll with us. Klaus?
Present.
Lanray, are you on the phone?
Yes,
thank you, Lanray. And maybe also note that if there are any connectivity issues, your proxy has gone to Thomas Rickett. Jennifer Wolfe?
Present.
Alan Greenberg, the ALAC liaison?
Present.
And Patrick Miles, the CCNSO liaison?
Present.
And for staff, David Olive, Marika, Rob, Mary, Lars Hoffman, Barry Cobb, myself, Glenda Saint-Géry, and perhaps the other staff in the room too. Thank you, Jonathan. Over to you.
Thank you, Glenn. Just to note that Magali has joined us at the table, so if you could mark Magali as present.
Yes, thank you.
So our next item is that we call for a statement of an update to any statements of interest. Can I call for any updates to statements of interest, please? Seeing none, we'll move on to item 1.3, which is an opportunity to comment on, review, or amend the agenda.
Actually, Jonathan, this is Ching.
Ching, go ahead.
Actually, I just wish if Glenn or you can distribute the Adobe link for the counselor. We're kind of seeming having problem finding that link. Thank you.
It's not here.
It's on the meeting page.
Okay. So if you could go to the main
meeting page.
There's a link to the Adobe room from the main Buenos Aires meeting page. Ching.
Thank you.
Excuse me, may I ask that all of you turn your microphones off after you finish speaking? Otherwise, we will have feedback. Thank you.
So we now note the status of the minutes from the previous council meetings per our operating procedures, and that the meetings of the most recent meeting, the 31st of October, will still be posted on the 21st. That's tomorrow. Under item two, I think I'll just make it remind you that this is one of two meetings we are due to hold. We're holding the first one here, in which case we'll deal with the substantive and the majority of the council business. Once we're finished, we intend to move to a different room, recommence the meeting, at which point we've got two main agenda items, which you'll be able to see on the publicly available pages, but just for the avoidance of doubt, we'll be covering the election of the chair and a meeting with the ATRT2 team. We no longer, as part of these public meetings as of Durban, are commencing with stakeholder group and constituency presentations to the GNSO, but to the GNSO Council and for GNSO benefit. But just to remind those that were previously presenting that we'd welcome any written input and record of proceedings that have gone on in the stakeholder groups or constituencies. I've reviewed the project list, and I think it seems to me that the majority of items on the action item list we've either covered in the Buenos Aires planning. With respect to the GNSO review, we'll cover that as part of the main agenda item. Similarly with PDP improvements, and with respect to the SCI charter, that business is dealt with. So as far as the action items are concerned, we'll either be picking them up during the course of this meeting and or they have previously been closed. Item three, we move on, is to the consent agenda. And here we have an item that has been removed and came out of the second motion on our agenda today. And this derives from the work of the working group on IGO-INGO names, where there was some discussion about the adequacy of the consensus levels within the working group and a requirement to refer these, or a request to refer these, to the standing committee, the GNSO Council's Standing Committee on Improvements Implementation. We have discussed this both during the course of our weekend sessions and in the interim, and it seemed that there was no opposition to this referral, and therefore it has ended up on the consent agenda. So can I just check that there are no objections to this item being on the consent agenda? Any comment? Any input? Seeing none, we will move on, and that is that, and we will proceed then to act according to that recommendation and refer this item to the Standing Committee on Improvements Implementation. Item four is our first motion of the day, which is to approve the charter for the translation and transliteration of contact information, PDP working group. Now this item, this motion was previously on our agenda and when withdrawn in order for the drafting team to revise the charter, which they duly did in good speed and with considerable effort. So I think we owe our thanks to the drafting team and others involved for the rapid response on that interim work and for ensuring that this did come back to the council in the shape that was satisfactory to all. The motion's been made by Yoav Keren, Councillor Yoav Keren. Can I call for a second for that motion?
Thank you, Jonathan. I'd like to second the motion.
That's Ching Chao to be recorded as the second of the motion. In addition, we also need a liaison to the working group from the council, so I'd like to call for a liaison.
Thank you, Jonathan. As discussed with Yoav before the meeting, I'll be glad if no objection to serve as a liaison for the group. Thank you.
Thank you, Ching. Any comments or concerns? Seeing none, let it be recorded that Ching Cha will serve as the liaison to the working group. Yoav, as the maker of the motion, it would be great if you would, since it's a short motion, I think it's perhaps appropriate to read to us both the whereas and the resolve clauses. If you could go ahead and bring those forward to the council, please.
Sure. Okay, the motion for approval of a charter for the translation and transliteration of contact information policy development process working group. Whereas on June 13, 2013, the GNSO Council initiated a policy development process on the translation and transliteration of contact information and decided to create a PDP working group for the purposes of fulfilling the requirements of the PDP. Following a call for volunteers, a drafting team was formed, and its members have developed a charter for consideration by the GNSO Council. The GNSO Council has reviewed the charter submitted by the drafting team. Resolved. The GNSO Council approved the charter, as it appears on the website, and appoints to be confirmed as the GNSO Council liaison, appoints Ching Chao as the GNSO Council liaison to the Translation and Transliteration of Contact Information PDP Working Group. The GNSO Council further directs that the work of the Translation and Transliteration of Contact Information PDP Working Group be initiated no later than 14 days after the approval of this motion, until such time as the working group can select a chair and that chair can be confirmed by the GNSO Council. The GNSO Council liaison shall act as interim chair. The working group shall follow the rules outlined in the GNSO working group guidelines.
Thank you, Yoav. Are there any comments, questions, or discussion in relation to this motion? And those include from participants that are not on the council. So if there are any comments, questions, or input, please feel free to provide them at this stage. Yoav.
Yeah, I just want to say that we're happy that the changes were made as we requested in the charter. It was made on time, quickly. I think it's a good charter right now. It will cover the different issues. This is a very important PDP. It has a lot of implications for the community, mainly for the non-English-speaking community. It shouldn't be mixed with IDNs, but it's not necessarily related only for IDNs, but it's very important, and hopefully the entire council will support it. Thank you.
Thank you, Yoav. I'd just like to, Ching, go ahead.
Thank you, Jonathan. I'd simply also like to echo what Yoav has just mentioned, and I think this kicks off one of the four recommendations from the internationalization registration data, working group report. So I guess we are moving forward with one of the fundamental work for the registration data project from the council level. And having said so, understanding and also the council has been receiving updates from the expert working group, which there are two. One is the EWG on the registration directory services, and the second one, and we were told over the weekend session on this particular internationalization registration data. So I guess from my standpoint and also from many of us here is that much of the coordination is needed, as we discussed over the weekend, understanding that both council, at the council level and the community and also the staff wish to put this thing forward simply because the needs of the the non-ASCII registrants. So I just simply like to just to applaud the work, the progress made so far, and also offer a simple word of caution, as much of the coordination is needed in the future. Thank you.
Thank you, Ching. Wendy, I see your hand is up.
Thank you. I apologize if this seems like a very basic question, but I've been reading the materials and I'm puzzled by the motivation for particularly translation of contact information. I can see transliteration to match storage where character sets are unavailable, perhaps, although I would hope that we're getting to the point where IDNs are available everywhere needed. But in what circumstances would it be logical to translate contact information? And if not, why can we not leave that out of the charter entirely?
Ching?
Thank you, Jonathan. And if I may answer, and perhaps the staff can offer a more comprehensive answer, or you know, at least a response at this stage. This is actually the working group is about to find out. So the IRD actually identified several sets of questions. So actually two of the questions. So the first question is to have the working group really to address if there's a need for translation or transliteration. So this working group is going to take us to embark on that journey. So thanks for the question. This is what is about to find out.
Thanks, Ching. I see a prospective comment from the okay. No. Just a comment to set the record straight. Although my paperwork doesn't show that the motion was seconded, it was in fact seconded by Zahid over the weekend. So, Glenn, if you could update the record to note that Zahid did second the motion already, and obviously Ching will remain as the liaison. Thank you. So, seeing no other hands up or comments, I think we will move to vote on this. I think, and if we were on a telephone, we might do a voice vote. I think we can do it by show of hands. So if I could call for anyone who is not in favor of the motion to raise their hand. Anyone who would like to abstain from voting for the motion? Wendy? And all those in favor to raise your hands. Can I call for the people on the phone, please? That's Joy and Lunray. Lunray. Thank you, Lunray. So I believe the motion is carried. Wendy, it's customary to provide a reason for an abstention. If you could just make any comment in that respect, that would be great.
Thank you. Given the workload of the Council and the GNSO community, I think focusing resources on the question of translation seems unnecessary, and I would have removed that from the charter.
Thank you, Wendy. Jeff.
This is a question for Wendy. Wendy, did you participate in the working group that made that recommendation?
No.
Yeah, I guess I would love to get to a point where when the working groups make recommendations and we get to a final report and then we get to the council, that those kinds of notes, while very important, should be made at the working group level It'd be great if we can get to that point. Thanks.
And I would love to get to a point when all of us have all of the time necessary to participate and be informed by all of our communities of all of these issues in development, too.
Thanks, Wendy. Thanks, Jeff. John.
This is John Berard. I've missed Wendy this past year.
Thanks, John. I suppose it's something which, notwithstanding anything that Wendy has or hasn't said, I think it's something, the integrity of the process, the bottom-up process, is something we've all been acutely focused on, and in fact it's pretty pertinent to this next motion as well. So let's move on to item 5, which is our next motion on the agenda today. It carries the unique distinction of being, we believe, to be the longest ever motion put before the GNSO Council. I think whilst that's, in a sense, as a side issue, slightly amusing, it's also reflective of the substance of the issue and the work that's gone into producing the motion, but all the hours and hours and hours of committed work that's gone on in the working group. So I think we owe an especial recognition of thanks to those who worked tirelessly in the working group, probably most especially the working group chair, but also recognizing all of those in the working group and the very committed staff support they had in undertaking this work, which runs right across the community. And I guess even recognizing some of the work prior to it, because there was work that went into this topic prior to the commencement of the working group as well. So I think given the size of the motion, it may not be appropriate to read the entire motion, or we'll be here for the full 2 hours dealing with that. But I know we do have a presentation for us to inform the council, who is largely well informed based on our weekend sessions, but also those of you who in the room who perhaps didn't have the opportunity to participate in the weekend sessions. So Thomas Rickett, our non-com appointed councillor to the Contracted Parties House, has been the working group chair, and Thomas, you will present to us an update on the work of the working group. So please go ahead.
Thanks very much, Jonathan. Just waiting for the slides to be put up. Under my control already. Good. Here we go. So I would like to present to you a couple of facts about the work of this working group. It has taken us a little bit longer than the calculated minimum time that a working group or that a PTP takes. So I think we have been working on this for a little bit more than 13 months. And prior to the work of this working group, there was a drafting team that only dealt with two questions or a subset of questions, i.e. protections for the International Olympic Committee as well as the Red Cross. And I would like to take this opportunity to thank the drafting team and Jeff Newman, who chaired the drafting team at the time, particularly for the hard work and excellent work that they did at the time. Now, I guess that this PDP working group is an excellent example of a good working collaborative effort of all stakeholders in the ICANN environment. And we've been working very hard. We had very diverse views, and when we started our work, everybody was standing very firmly by their positions. And it was only over time, and when we exchanged thoughts, and when we tried to better understand the other group's views, that we were able to compromise. And that's what the ICANN PDP process is about, that we find solutions, and that the solutions that you now find in front of you, the recommendations that the working group came up with, have been the end result of a long, long process where we met weekly. We had two-hour conference calls, and I think the attendance of this working group calls has been great. We had more than 40 members of the working group, and more than 50% of those have regularly attended our meetings. Also, we had face-to-face meetings. We did meetings to reach out to the community, to solicit input from the community, to get their views, because there were times during our work when the working group got stuck, when we ran out of ideas, and when people came up to me and said, Thomas, I think we run into a dead-end street. There is no consensus in sight. But nonetheless, we kept trying very hard, and we found ways to proceed. And what you find in front of you is actually the working result of every group in the GNSO being participating, as well as other people outside the GNSO community that provided their input. So this has been tagged a case study for a PDP by both the Governmental Advisory Committee as well as the ICANN board a little bit more than a year back. And I think that it really deserves being looked at more closely. We were asked to work on this in an expedited manner, and some of us would have hoped to complete our works faster, but given the complexity of the task that we have been challenged with, I think we still came up with results in a very reasonable period of time. So what you have read, or hopefully some of you were not forced to read all the report, but the fun report that has been produced has more than 80 pages to read, and it's a very good read, and I will dive into that in a moment. So basically, the structure of the final report is that we put the recommendations that we came up with at the very top. So the format of this final report is slightly different from the final reports that you read elsewhere, which start with the management summary. We've chosen to focus on the recommendations. And as you will remember, we have been tasked with looking at recommendations for potential protections for both the Red Cross, Red Crescent movement, the International Olympic Committee, international governmental organizations, as well as international non-governmental organizations. And there were recommendations that reached consensus level. There were others that were mere proposals that did not reach even strong support inside the working group, and that's what you find in there. We also discussed exception procedures, because the working group felt that whenever such privileges are granted, that nonetheless these should not limit space for legitimate third-party use. You find also considerations about how to implement the recommendations that we came up with to existing GTLDs. As you will remember, the GAC focused its advice on new GTLDs, but the GNSO Council, when it started this work, felt that it was important to also think about existing namespaces in order to provide for a consistent level of protections in all namespaces. And that certainly brings a lot with it, a couple of questions as to how to deal with existing registrations and so on and so forth. And the working group has spent some time thinking about solutions there. Then you find a section about the working group deliberations. So you can learn about the methodology that we applied to come up with the solutions that we're now presenting to the GNSO community. And for those who think that, despite the length of the motion, that this is all very clear and that one could have done that very fast, I really recommend that you dive into that section of the report in order to find out what the complexity was and what the hurdles were, particularly when it came to the legal questions. We've asked the ICANN General Counsel to do some research for us, and we've been waiting for that research report for a couple of months to be better informed about what the legal situation is internationally as well as nationally, because we would not want to do something that takes out of consideration what's existing law, because fundamentally what we try to do should have a basis in international law in particular, because that's also been part of the GNSO recommendations for the new GTLD program as such. Then you find a lot of information about background and community input, and I'll get back to community input in a moment, as well as appendices such as the charter, information on attendance, and so on and so forth. And I would like to point your attention in particular to minority positions. So I think that it's the nature of a PDP that not everybody gets their will. Nonetheless, those that did not reach what they've originally asked for wanted to make sure, and this is part of the working group guidelines as well, that their view is adequately presented to the wider audience for them to see what their original asks were and what the rationale for their asks was. So you find minority positions in several appendices to this report. Also, there's the consensus call tool, which is a document that I recommend you to take a look at, because we recorded the positions of those that have responded to the consensus call. And I would like to add to that that determining whether recommendations reach full consensus, rough consensus, strong support but significant opposition, or divergence is not something that you would do by counting noses. It's not a voting process, but it is a determination of the consensus level of those that have responded, and that there is more to more required to do that. So the burden on determining the consensus level is on the working group chair, but I pretty much made this a collaborative effort with the working group. We've had hour-long discussions to see whether the determination of consensus level adequately reflected the views of the working group, and I guess it's worthwhile taking a look at that, and you will then also find out who supported what and who was against what. Then you find the public comment review tool, and I'll get back to that in a moment, as well as lists of identifiers to be protected, and that's also going to be part of my little presentation. I have asked staff to put together this very slide because there are those in the community who claim that participation in public comment period is a moot exercise because they wouldn't be heard anyway. This working group went through each and every public comment we received one by one individually and discussed them one by one. And as you can see in the upper line of this slide, this is just an example of multiple reports, that, comments that we received. But there you can see the public comment review tool. You can't read it, but I just want you to get an idea of how this works. So it's basically a summary of the public comment that we received. Then there is another column that speaks to what the council, what the working group deliberations on that specific comment were, whether the item had already been addressed or whether action needs to be taken. And in this specific case, you can see that the public comment received, which in this case was a comment received from the business constituency, it made its way to the consensus call tool, so it went on record there, and then it actually made its way to the redline version of the final report. So it was reflected all the way through. And the lower lower example that you see there is the public comment made by an individual, in this case Brian Beckham, who had an idea of something that we then thought should be highlighted more in our final report. So you can see how the public comment went into the redline version of the final report and then actually made its way into the language of the final report. So I take this as an encouragement, please, to make yourself heard in public comment periods. It's a worthwhile exercise. Let's talk about the dimension of the protected of the protections that we discussed. As I mentioned earlier to you, we were tasked to look at protections or potential protections for the Red Cross, Red Crescent movement, for the International Olympic Committee, international governmental organizations, and international non-governmental organizations. And I would like to highlight that the working group has looked at all those individually. There have been allegations in the past that we would group those and make decisions lumping them all together. And that is certainly not the case. The working group has conducted its deliberation for each of those four types separately, and the consensus calls were structured in a way that we would also ask for the for support or for the lack of support for each and every organization, for each and every recommendation. And that actually made an awful lot of recommendations, as you can well remember, and this is why the working group came ultimately up with 29 recommendations. Then we talked about top-level protections versus second-level protections. We looked at the scope of the identifiers, protections for full names, for acronyms, for exact matches, but also there was a discussion surrounding whether similar strings should be reflected in protection mechanisms. We were looking at languages. We also looked at various options for protection, i.e. having names reserved putting names into a central repository such as the Trademark Clearinghouse. We deliberated whether protection should be based on a claim service only, whether this claim service should be granted for a 90-day period or for permanently. We're looking at sunrise protections, but also we were looking at curative mechanisms such as the URS, the Uniform Rapid Suspension System, as well as the Uniform Dispute Resolution Policy. Also, we discussed whether the beneficiaries of the protection should be granted fee waivers or some other financial assistance so that they could deploy, for example, the legal rights objection for future rounds. And all that has gone into the recommendations that I'm going to present to you in a second. These, I guess the slides are going to be made available to you, but on this slide you find some additional information on what the identifiers are, so, you know, to help you with the terminology. We have different scopes for different recommendations, and I'll get back to that in a moment, and also the languages that we were including in the recommendations. A few words about scope. We have distinguished various levels of protection, so not all identifiers that the various groups have asked to be protected could be recommended to be protected in the same way. So we needed to group identifiers and then associate to these groups the various recommendations, i.e. the protection mechanisms. And for the Red Cross, Red Crescent societies, there are scope 1 identifiers, which are the strings in front of you that you see up on the slide. I'm not going to read them out to you. And also the languages in which they are being asked for protection. And then we have scope 2 identifiers, which are a little bit more, which are national Red Cross and Red Crescent societies, as well as some additional strings and acronyms. For the International Olympic Committee, there are only scope 1 identifiers, i.e. the full names that you find there, and I should point out that the IOC has never asked for acronym protection. There has been some confusion surrounding that, so this is just to clarify that there was never asked to take that into the equation. When it comes to IGOs, we have based our recommendations on the list produced by the GAC. There have been extensive deliberations as to how and if so in which way we could task somebody. We also talked about who that could be to amalgamate a list or to produce a list of IGOs, but ultimately our recommendation is to take the list that has already been produced by third party, and in this instance that is the GAC. So we have the full names in scope 1 and the acronyms in scope 2. For international non-governmental organizations, we were also looking for solutions whereby we would not be tasked with producing a list of international non-governmental organizations, and so we decided that going with the ECOSOC list as a basis for protections would be something to be included in the recommendations. There we have the general consultative status list as well as the special consultative status list. Now the recommendations that we put together, it's 29 in total, can be grouped as followed. And I guess this makes it easier for you to understand the mind-boggling motion, which, as Jonathan said, is claimed to be the longest motion in GNSO's history. But unfortunately, there is no simple answer to a multifaceted and very complex question that's been posed to us. But let me nonetheless try to put it in a nutshell for you to better understand, although I have to make a disclaimer that if you want to get the full story, if you want to understand all the niceties, you need to read the motion as well as the final report. Now, there has been support for top-level reservation protection for full names. That means the full names are ineligible for registration. So that's something that certainly doesn't apply to this round, but that is a protection mechanism for future rounds. Also, the working group recommends that when these protections are granted, that an exception procedure should go along with it to allow for third-party legitimate use. And that protection is granted to all four categories of organizations. At the second level, there is consensus that there should be protections for the full names of the RCRC, IOC, and IGOs. And it's important to note that there is no reservation protection for INGOs in this instance. What does this reservation protection mean? It's what you now find in specification 5 to the registry agreement. So those names can't be registered. And also, as well as for the top level, an exception procedure should go along with this type of protection. Then we have a third class of protections that were recommended, and not all of them reached consensus level, but some of them only reached the level of strong support but significant opposition. And that would be that identifiers are bulk added to the trademark clearinghouse. So not each and every beneficiary of these protections needs to go into the trademark clearinghouse individually and apply for inclusion, but they would be bulk added, which makes it easier for these organizations. And they would get a 90 days claims notification, and that would apply for the additional RCRC names as well as the IGO acronyms, the RCRC additional strings, and the INGO full names. So again, you will remember the INGOs have not been granted reservation of their full names at the second level, but nonetheless they would be included in the trademark clearinghouse. And then there was also a recommendation that received strong support but significant opposition with respect to the question as to whether those names that go into the trademark clearinghouse should also benefit from Sunrise services. Another recommendation that we received consensus on was the request for an issue report for a PDP to determine how IGOs and INGOs can use the curative mechanisms of the URS as well as the UDRP. Not all of these four organizations can make use of these curative mechanisms, and the working group felt that it was appropriate to open that up so that they could actually take action against unlawful third-party registrations in the instances covered by the UDRP as well as the URS. And the last item is the item that we already dealt with in the consent agenda, and that's a formal request that we have with respect to consensus level, and I'm not going to dwell on that more. We also discussed proposals that did not receive strong support but significant opposition, and that is acronym reservation. So the working group decided not to support those, and even more so, there was something which can be called consensus against, because only the organizations that would benefit from the IGO from the acronym protections were actually in favor of those. Also, fee waivers did not make their way to reaching strong support or consensus, as well as a permanent TMCH claim service. So the claim service granted is limited to a 90 days period. I should point out that there are some difference to the GAC advice that the board received, and that is with respect to the reservation of acronyms. Acronyms did not make their way to get reservation protection. We have one recommendation that deals with the inclusion of IGO acronyms into the trademark clearinghouse, which received strong support but significant opposition, and which did not achieve consensus level. And I think we'll speak to that in a moment when it comes to the motion. And also, the INGOs have not been covered by GAC advice, but since it was the purpose of the PDP to look at the question of protections for both IGOs as well as INGOs holistically, we included that in our charter and in our work. So I think I'll leave it at that for the moment. Here you find some links to the final report, public comments, and the web page with all the documents that were reflected in the PDP work. And I'm more than happy to answer any questions there might be.
Thank you, Thomas, for the more than comprehensive background on the nature of the work, the detail of the deliberations of the working group, and all that went into this very comprehensive PDP. I think that is helpful in ensuring that we, by not reading the full motion, which would be too lengthy, as I said earlier, can ensure that we, that is the council, who were previously well informed, but also everyone in the room, is properly and appropriately informed on this. So the motion contains 22 whereas clauses and goes on to present 7 resolve clauses, the first 6 of which have the consensus support of the working group that Thomas described, and the seventh of which has a lower level of support than consensus, described as strong support but significant opposition from the working group. Nonetheless, they are all recommendations of the working group. What we have discussed and I believe are in agreement on is therefore splitting our vote on this motion into two categories. Those components of the resolve clauses, that is 1 to 6, that have the consensus support of the working group, and 7, which has the strong support but significant opposition behind it as a recommendation to the Council. So before we proceed to vote on the motion, it is customary that we should have any discussion or input, and that is from the Council, questions indeed for Thomas and or the staff that worked on this, and comments from within the room. So let me pause and see if there are any comments or input from within the room, from the Council. Brian, I see your hand is up. Please go ahead.
Brian Winterfeld, Initial Property Constituency. I want to thank Thomas and the working group for all their hard work. Even reading the motion is exhausting, so I can only imagine what it went through to get to the point of drafting it and doing so much work. So we really want to thank you. The IPC definitely supports the motion, and also, as Thomas mentioned in his presentation, there were minority reports, and I just wanted to call the Council's attention to the fact that when the GAC and the board met yesterday, that the minority position that's included from the Red Cross and the Federation was actually on the agenda, and there was some support voice. So there may be something coming out of the GAC, and I know that we're in the process of making sure that we have more communication back and forth, but I just wanted to make sure that the Council was aware that that was something that was discussed, and we might be seeing something else with that. So I just wanted to call attention. But again, thank you, Thomas, and appreciate your hard work.
Thanks, Brian. Just to respond to that, I think, Glenn, if you could note then that we will make a special effort over and above whatever we would normally do to communicate the outcome of the vote on this PDP to the GAC immediately after the meeting. I think that would be very helpful to ensure that the leadership group of the GAC and indeed the GAC as a whole are informed. Klaus.
I would like to make a statement. Some of you might know that my constituency, NPOC, is very closely connected with this discussion and question. And I can tell you we definitely didn't get in this report what we wanted. And there are a lot of questions which are not, we wouldn't approve and we would write it different. But I want to tell you that we had a very, very close look in the complete procedures of the working group, and that working group has worked exceptionally well and fine, open and transparent. And what came out is a compromise we can live with. And I just want to say this for us is one of the perfect examples where nobody gets everything they want. And secondly, this is how multi-stakeholder process of policy making should look like. And I just want to again completely recommend the working group and tell you that we will vote yes.
Thank you, Klaus. Any other comments, questions, or input? John Berard.
John Berard from the business constituency. Interestingly enough, there's been a thread through the first 4 days of the meeting here in Buenos Aires about the work of the working groups, the ATRT2 discussions. It's come up in other meetings that the essential element of the bottom-up, consensus-driven, multi-stakeholder process is founded and built on the strength of the working group. Often we see working groups that are understaffed because of the amount of work, as we have heard, that the community is asked to perform. But in this instance, I think that the working group showed that a broad group of from almost every corner of the full community, not just the GNSO community, can come together and reach decisions that, in my view, we at the council level need to support. right? The last thing I think that we want to do is undermine the value of the commitment that individual members of the community make when they say yes to participating in a working group. So I commend the working group in this instance as an example of what can be done, and perhaps as a case study for those that come next in being able to create a broad range, a wide roster of talented people.
Thanks, John. Zahid.
Just wanted to echo what John just said, that you know, this is an example that demonstrates an extremely difficult problem with highly sort of polarized issues when they started having come into a consensus. And for those who said that maybe in some sense, you know, the GNSO can be bypassed because, you know, there are things that just cannot be done here or they have to be done elsewhere, I think this is an example that shows that we are able to arrive at policy making. So I commend obviously Thomas as well as Jeff for the hard work that they have done. It's incredible. In fact, it's also an example, not just of a case study of how this can work, and maybe GAC needs to look at it, but also an example of how they've interacted with our structures and our constituencies directly. So much appreciation there. Thank you.
Thank you. Before I turn to Wolf, who's next in the queue, just to emphasize that GNSO working groups are open to all to participate. So echoing and understanding those two prior two comments and emphasizing the openness of the working groups. Wolf Ulrich.
Yeah, thank you. Wolf Ulrich Knoben speaking. Well, on behalf of the ISPCP constituency also, I would like to say, well, we give full support to the outcome of that working group and how the working group has been dealing with that. Having that said, so I would like also to emphasize, so this is a really good example of how it works, and it's a good example to make, to produce more awareness about the PDP and how the PDP is working, awareness from all inside ICANN. So specifically, I think that was one of the reasons why, for example, Fadi, in his opening speech, also made this remark about the PDP, that we do not have to defend how we are going to work here and how we fulfill our work. This model, this PDP model, is working, and that's one of the best examples here. Thank you.
Thank you, Wolf Ulrich. Alan.
I didn't realize I was that next. I guess I'm in an unusual position. Without detracting anything from Thomas and the working group, of which I participated very actively, I guess I have to highlight some of the negative aspects of things that have come out in this process. This is probably the first PDP that I can remember where not a single one of the recommendations received unanimous approval of the working group. And that's something that has to be noted, because that's unusual and probably inevitable based on the participants and the subject matter. And also the recommendations that are being put forward with consensus or strong support are ones that essentially rose to the top of the pile from the large number of alternatives looked at. And it's not 100% clear to me or to ALAC whether it's actually a consistent and cohesive set of recommendations that can be implemented as a single entity. And I think all of those issues highlight the difficulty of the problem and the difficulty of the PDP process in recommending good policy as opposed to reaching consensus. And after all, good policy is the target of what we're looking for. And I'm not saying this isn't. It's going to be a complex process to analyze the bits and pieces of the recommendations and see how they stand as a single entity. But it's to Thomas's credit and the working group's credit that we got as far as we did, where some of us were predicting we wouldn't get this far. But it also illustrates the difficulty in using the current process to address really difficult and contentious issues.
Thanks, Alan. If I could just add that, in my opinion, the fact that it was complex and didn't necessarily reach and accurately reflected a lack of full consensus is not necessarily a negative. That's just a thought. But no need to respond. I mean, I think you'd be... we've got first Petter, then Volker.
Well, I just wanted to add that, first of all, we have done a great job on a difficult task. And I heard some comment yesterday that there's too many things in the same basket. Well, I'm not a basket player, I'm a lawyer, so I'm fairly used to it, and to me it's normal. And I said, IPC fully support.
Volker?
Yes, Volker Greimann speaking. I want to add my voice to the choir of people that commend the working group for the excellent job that they have done, because this has been a very contentious issue, a bunch of very contentious issues for a lot of stakeholders and members of the community. And the amount of debate that has gone on is a reflection of that. I think the case that there is no full consensus determination recommendation in the work from the working group is also a reflection of that, and therefore those recommendations that did receive consensus are a very good example of the ICANN process working very well. I'm not going to disparage the recommendation that did not receive consensus but only strong support. I just would like to say that because they are very contentious, the significant opposition that has been voiced is also a very compelling case why these recommendations would probably not be a good idea. So I'm a bit conflicted on what the best policy for this would be, what the best practice is going to be, but I have my opinion and I'm going to vote accordingly.
Wendy.
Thank you, Jonathan, and thank you, Thomas, for sharing the detailed explanation of the long work of the group. I think that's important because my personal position and the positions of many in the non-commercial stakeholders group differs from the consensus that the group reached. Many of us opposed the reservation of these names in any circumstance, and yet participated through the process and in the discussions toward these consensus, and in some cases were in the dissent on the strong support with reservations. So I think this kind of extended debate reflects the best of ICANN's policy process, when groups whose positions start out very different can get a bit closer together, and those who oppose can have some influence on the eventual consensus positions. And so for that reason, I find that I will support the recommendations that reached a consensus despite the opposition individually to many of their elements.
Thank you, Wendy. I was going to call the queue to a limit after Thomas, but we have a contribution from the room. So, Chuck, please go ahead.
Thank you. Chuck Gomes from VeriSign, and a member of the working group, but just one of a large number of people. And several of you kind of hit at this, and Wendy just illustrated it. But one of the things that impressed me about this working group, that in spite of the huge differences we had, everyone, without exception, participated in a very professional way, showing respect for one another, even when we didn't get what we wanted. And it was as several have said, it was an impressive example of how we can work together effectively, even when we have huge variances in terms of the issues we're dealing with. So my compliments to every member of the working group. It was an exemplary example for us.
Would you like to go before, or would you like? I'm going to have one last contribution from the table from Maria, and then we'll go to Thomas, somewhat fittingly, I think, for last word before we bring this to a vote.
Thank you, Jonathan. I think this motion gets to the heart of the sort of debate or evolving perspective of whether the GNSO Council is a legislative body or whether it is a management oversight body. And obviously, it's neither one nor the other, but I think we do vary a little bit as we're going on, and that those things have changed over the last few years, to the point that when a working group presents full consensus on something, it's definitely not our job to go against it, and it's our job to respect and continue to motivate working group participants. But I would say this also illustrates some of the points raised in the ATRT2 report and the research materials it was based on, where there is a problem with the narrowness of working groups in terms of their geographic and professional representation and the numbers of people on them who are able to be supported by their employers in participation. Now, that is not at all to impugn the hard work, dedication and good faith that the people on this working group clearly went about their task with. But I think Wendy has pointed out this is the best that the PDP can offer, and it is, but it's the best for now. And I think we really should take a hint from this and look at the broader participativeness of the GNSO, of working groups, in terms of geography, culture, language, and professional orientation. So I'm going to be voting in favour of all of the consensus parts, because I think that's our job as councillors. But I personally take it on myself that you know, I need to do better helping to get more representativeness in working groups. And I think it's something we should all do as we're going forward.
Thanks, Maria. I think, Thomas, you have the privilege of the closing remarks.
Just one more thing. I've already thanked working group members and applauded them for their excellent collaboration, and I will certainly convey your positive feedback to the working group, but one aspect we haven't really spoken about, and I have intentionally reserved that for this very last minute, and that is that sometimes there have been... We heard people say that the collaboration between working groups and ICANN staff was not as it should be, and that there was too little support. But in this case, I guess the staff support that the working group got, and I in particular, has been nothing short of excellent. We've been, you know, they've been available always. The work results that they produced were excellent, and they're working virtually day and night. So if I could, I'd like to ask Barry, Mary and Marika to please stand up, and let's give them a big hand and a big hand.
Thank you, Thomas. Thank you, Working Group. Thank you, ICANN staff. Let's move to the vote on this. Now, just to remind you once more, we have split the vote into two components. The first dealing with the first six resolve clauses, that is those which received consensus support in the working group, and the second vote dealing with number seven, which is that which received strong support but significant opposition. Jeff.
Can we also just wanted to point out that after we go through this vote, right, we're some of them are actually full or capital C, capital P consensus policies. So even after we vote one through six, if it's not unanimous, we'll have to go and make sure that we hit those thresholds to determine how we recommend that to the board.
Thank you, Jeff. You raise a very good point. Depending on the level of support those components of the motion receive will impact their future implementation. So that is something to be aware of as well. It's quite subtle, but it's not simply a matter of carrying each component of the motion. It's also a matter of the extent of the support they receive will have an impact on how these are implemented and what action is taken following our vote. So, Glenn, I think we'll, given the substance and nature of the topic, I think we'll do a roll call vote on this.
So to remind councillors to be crystal clear, you're voting on items 1 to 6, those recommendations as a cluster, those recommendations from the working group that receive consensus support of the working group. Glenn.
Thank you, Jonathan. John Berard.
Yes.
Wolf Ulrich Knobben.
In favour.
Yes. Wendy Salzer.
Yes.
Maria Farrell.
Yes.
Joy Lidicote, can you hear me?
Joy, could you please repeat your comment? Thank you, Joy. We've got that.
Thank you, Joy. Zahid Jamil?
Yes.
Jeff Newman?
Yes.
Lanri Ajayi?
Yes.
Thomas Rickert?
Yes.
Mason Cole?
Yes.
Brian Winterfeld?
Yes.
Oswaldo Nuova?
Yes.
Yoav Kieran?
Yes.
Ching Chao?
Yes.
Jonathan Robinson?
Yes.
Peter Rindforth?
Yes.
Klaus Stoll?
Yes.
Magali Pazello?
Yes.
Volker Greimann?
Yes.
David Cake?
Yes, and I would just like to put a similar caveat to Joy.
So the motion passes unanimously, Jonathan.
Thank you, Glenn. The motion passes unanimously. At least that component of the motion, to be clear, that's resolve clauses 1 to 6. And we will be clear in communicating with the council as soon as possible on the impact and consequences of that unanimous vote, so that everyone is 100% clear. Now, the second vote on this is to deal with resolve clause 7. And so, Glenn, if you could take a similar roll call dealing with resolve clause 7, that component of the recommendation of the working group that did not receive consensus support.
I'll do that, Jonathan. Ching Chao?
No.
Volker Greimann?
No.
Joy Lidicote?
No.
Magali Pazello?
No. No.
David Cake?
No.
Klaus Stoll?
No.
Peter Rinfoth?
Yes.
Wolf Ulrich Knoben?
No.
Joif Karen?
No.
Wendy Salsa?
No.
Jonathan Robinson?
No.
Osvaldo Nova?
No.
Brian Winterfeld?
Yes.
Mason Cole?
No.
Maria Farrell?
No.
John Berard?
Yes.
Jeff Newman?
No.
Thomas Riquet?
No.
Lanry Ajayi? Lanry, can you hear us? Thank you. In the contracted party house, there are 7 no votes, and in the non-contracted party house, Zahid.
Yes.
Sorry. Yes. In the contracted party house, 7 votes against, 7 no votes. And in the non-contracted party house, we have 4 votes against, 4 votes in favor, and 10 votes against. How can that be? Hang on, wait. Yes. Sorry, we had 9 votes against and 4 votes in favor in the non-contracted party house.
Jeff.
I'd like to, I think maybe the council might in the wrap-up session. This is kind of interesting because a number of the representatives from stakeholder groups and constituencies that supported this notion in the working group have actually voted against the recommendations here, which I find interesting. The registries were the only opposition in the working group to this particular part, and so the registries voted no, consistent with what we did. I'm actually kind of really surprised that the stakeholder group representatives and constituencies that I mean, Thomas was very right in his report to say that it had strong support with those that participated. So it might not be something for discussion now, but I think we do owe an explanation as to why there's such a differential between what happened in the working group and what happened here, especially because everybody's comments was in such high praise of what happened in the working group and how this is the model. So I think we just need to explain, because others are going to see this and others will question how that could happen. And I think maybe during the wrap-up session, this is something that the council may want to take up as an issue. Thanks.
Thanks, Jeff. It's a good point and a good question. And it may be that there are issues around the level of consensus, and it may be that there are issues of consistency between the work in the working group and that, and then the vote at the council. So I think it's a very useful topic to pick up and appreciate your suggestion.
Alan.
Yeah, I'm not sure how our time is going, but I would suggest that if anyone has any ready answers, people who voted against it but who voted supported it in the working group have any short and concise answers to put forward now in the formal meeting, that might be worthwhile.
I'm happy to hear that. That I think we have enough time to hear that. I think I'm reluctant to get into a full discussion on it, but I think if you're right, I heard you, Alan, that's great. I think if there's a short and concise explanation or any kind of indication of the motivation, I'm open to hearing it. Anyone have any comment they'd like to make at this stage? Osvaldo.
Yes, I participated in the working group, and in the case of our constituency, we made a lot of concessions to reach a lot of concessions in order to reach consensus in several of the positions. We were very much against a lot of the protections we are given in this case. So I think that what happens is in the working group, in some occasions we would say yes to see if we could get consensus with the other, even though we weren't totally glad with that decision. And now that here in the council that we finally see that we couldn't reach consensus there, and since we were against it from the beginning, we voted not.
Thanks for the question, Jeff. Thanks for your input on the answer, Osvaldo. I think that's very helpful to illustrate some of the thinking. Does anyone else have any comment or input on a related point? Thomas.
Certainly, I can't speak on behalf of the groups that have expressed their view differently in the working group level against what we see today in the council, but I would like to offer a potential explanation for it, and that is that you can support something at the working group level, wait for the consensus call to be completed, but then make a determination that you want only consensus positions to be passed on to the board. And this recommendation that we've included is one that did not reach consensus level, but only strong support but significant opposition. And I think that we need to continue our discussion on that one. As I said during the working group session over the weekend, there is no clear guideline for working groups as to whether they should only pass on consensus recommendations to council or whether they can also include strong support but significant opposition positions to the council. And I think that maybe the outcome clearly demonstrates that there might be the need for clearer guidance to working group that they should only pass on consensus positions given the voting behavior today.
Without offering a view, I'll just posit that it could be equally so the counter position, that this creates a level of there is a flexibility in the process, and there is an opportunity to discuss this, which I'm reluctant to get into in the full now. I don't think it's perhaps appropriate, but at least timely to do so. But, you know, there may well be counter views as well. Great. Well, thank you very much, everyone. I know there's a tremendous amount of work, not only from the working group, as we've amply acknowledged, but councillors have genuinely talked with their groups and attempted to come to a considered and well thought out position. So thanks all for all of your work and effort on getting this piece of work to the position it is now in. The next item brings us down to earth a little more in the sense that it deals with how we, it's item six, deals with prospective improvements to the policy development process. This is part of a theme of the Council's work, which is to take on the role ourselves of ensuring that we continually seek to improve the way in which we work and the effectiveness and efficiency of our outputs. This is something we sought staff help with, and Marika's from ICANN policy staff has been great in compiling a series of suggestions which we had seen previously and reviewed, and now further moving that on to integrate what has been proposed with the work of the ATRT2. And in many ways, I hope this prepares us a little more for our later discussion with the ATRT2 team. And so, Marika, if you could just provide us with a brief review and really, I guess, the obvious questions that it throws up for the Council for our discussion or conclusion or next steps.
Sure, thanks, Jonathan. So this is Marika. So basically, I circulated an updated version of the table just before I think you all left for Buenos Aires, or maybe when you were already in the plane. So I'll just briefly go through it. You'll see it on the Adobe Connect room, and I think Lars has also posted a link to it in the public one. And maybe taking a little bit one step back is basically the council started discussing this in its meeting in Durban, where we actually had a kind of a brainstorming session on, you know, what elements of the PDP could be improved or streamlined without, you know, having a major overhaul of the process as such, but within the current flexibility that it offers. So from that discussion, we basically narrowed it down to a number of items that we then discussed over the various council meetings that we held between Durban and now. And the last iteration of that is what you have currently on your screens, and what was circulated is basically an overview of those proposed improvements. And for each of those detailed set of proposed next steps, because I think the idea is that we maybe start trying out or experimenting with these proposed improvements, and then as well in a certain amount of time actually see how these are working out. Are they having an impact? Are they, you know, speeding up the process where we can? Do they bring indeed new elements to the process, where I think we've spoken before about, you know, getting new participants to the table, making sure that people feel integrated and understanding of the process and don't drop out after one working group. And what the table does as well, and Jonathan already referred to it, that the ATRT2 has also made a number of recommendations in relation to the GNSO PDP. So what I try to do as well is to track those recommendations and how they actually align with some of the improvements and streamlining we're already considering. So maybe it would be worth, I think, as many of you may not have had a chance to look at those proposed next steps, just to take you through it, if that's okay, and then hopefully get your feedback on whether you think it's something we can start working with, or whether you need a little bit more time to consider those and maybe at the next meeting decide whether you want to move forward with all of these or some of these. So the first proposal was to actually look at the chartering of a working group, and the proposal was there to actually include a proposed charter as part of the issue report. So basically, staff would prepare a first draft, which would be part of the preliminary issue report, which would allow then the community as well to comment on that. That would also go into the final issue report and would be submitted together with the final issue report to the GNSO Council to allow you the option to vote at the initiation of a PDP at the same time as adopting the charter, which basically would reduce one step in the process for those instances where you think it's appropriate. So we got some feedback there where people expressed some concern about making that the standard default option, and also noting that there should be enough flexibility for council members to basically say, well, we actually do prefer a drafting team to look at this or start from scratch. So we made some changes to the document as a result. So now the proposal is basically that we would update the issue report request form to specifically include an option to request a draft charter as part of the preliminary issue report, so the requester can indicate whether or not they would like that. And that would then be clarified as well as part of the motion. And then basically as well communicate at the time of the consideration of the initiation of the PDP to all council members that it would be treated as a kind of consent item. One only needs to say that they don't want to vote on it, and it would automatically go to a drafting team for further consideration. And again, I think this is one where, you know, in the 6-12 month period of time where we maybe had some additional issue reports, whether we review whether that's working or not. And again, if we think it's working, whether we would need to make some changes to the operating procedures or the PDP manual to actually formalize that option. On intensity of PDP working group meetings, we also discussed having, you know, more meetings or longer meetings may help speed up the process. But several of you also pointed out that, you know, there may be limitations to doing so due to volunteer availability. So our suggestion is here that maybe as a first step, staff would actually gather further information on the duration of the working group phase in the number of hours. So we have a better idea as well, what are we actually talking about? What does it take to complete a PDP? Then maybe also review some of the recent efforts that have actually used an intensive schedule, like the IGO-INGO PDP, and then maybe analyze the different options that exist to increase intensive meetings, including pros and cons of each of these options. And then based on that analysis, hopefully the council would be in a position to decide which of those options it would like to pursue, if any. The next one is on the increase of the pool of PDP working group volunteers. As I think as several of you are aware, there are various efforts ongoing that deal with outreach, getting new people in. So our suggestions here would be that the first step would be for the council to actually review the existing outreach efforts and determine whether there are any actions the GNSO Council should be taking to increase the pool of PDP volunteers. Another suggestion we may hear that make here is that the council should consider sending invitations to each stakeholder group constituency chair and executive committee to encourage them to recruit for the particular PDP working group, and making sure as well that the stakeholder groups and constituencies are kept up to date by representatives from their groups on the progress of the PDP. Something we're actually already actively working on is exploring this option of setting up a welcome webinar for new PDP working group members to provide them with an introduction to the process and the tools that we have available to hopefully make participation easier and ensure their continued engagement in the PDP activities. We're hoping to launch a pilot of that together with the support of Mikey, who I think is here in the room, shortly after Buenos Aires, for some of the new efforts that are starting off. And I think the idea really behind it is just to have a kind of open door. We have a very brief introduction and just open it up for questions and really giving them an opportunity to ask anything they want to know or learn about what it means to be a member of a working group. Then we had another option of requiring working group representatives or participants from each stakeholder group constituency, and possibly also liaisons from supporting organizations and advisory committees. So I think this is where the council may want to discuss this option with the stakeholder group constituency and constituency chairs, whether the option of requiring at least one representative per stakeholder group or constituency per PDP working group would be acceptable. Because of course, partly this is also a resource question. And I think similarly, Jonathan may want to discuss with the SOAC chairs whether the assigning of informal liaisons to each PDP working group will be welcomed or an option to ensure that early engagement and communication is ensured to the various parts of the ICANN community. Improving online tools and training. Again, there are various efforts that are ongoing. As some of you may know, the learn.icann.org platform was launched at this meeting, which already provided a number of training courses and tools. It also provided the options for community members themselves to develop courses. So the suggestion here would be for the council to review the existing online tools and training efforts and determine whether there are any additional actions that should be taken by the GNSO Council and or provide input on how existing activities may be further improved or modified in order to contribute to the success of the PDP. And again, I think there from a staff perspective in combination with the newcomer webinar, we'll be looking at that as well to make sure that the tools that we think should be there or the presentations that we believe would help new participants are included there. Then there was also the option to explore having a PDP working group rapporteur. So instead of having the working group jointly drafting the report, consider appointing a PDP rapporteur that would actually, for example, liaise with the different working group members or groups involved and on the basis of that provide a first draft. Here we have suggested that staff may want to explore this option further by providing some more details on how this would or could work in practice. For example, how would a rapporteur be elected? How would interaction go with the staff and the working group members? And then the council may want to review that feedback and decide whether or not you would like to pursue that option or not. There's two more, the professional moderation of facilitation and improvement of experts. And there's also one of the, I forgot to mention for the previous one, but also one that specifically was called out by the ATRT2 as one of the options to explore. So again, here I think we're suggesting that staff may want to first gather some further information on potential costs of involving professional facilitators and issues that would need to be considered should the council decide to pursue this option further. And then again, the council can review on that basis whether or not it's worth considering that option further. Then we also had the option of organizing workshops and discussions at the outset. Here we're suggesting that when a request for an issue report is received, the council should consider discuss in close collaboration with the requester whether there would be value in organizing a workshop discussion on the issue before formally requesting, considering the request. And lastly, on better data and metrics, I think here something we discussed over the weekend as well, I think for the Council to basically monitor the efforts of the GNSO metrics and reporting metrics reporting working group closely and identify whether they are indeed addressing the needs that would help PDP working groups work more efficiently and effectively. So these are some of the ideas we've put on the table, and I think it's really now for you to either review those or indicate that you think, you know, we should start exploring these next steps. As said, I think for most of these, we would be coming back to you with more information or more options to discuss. For some of them, you know, we may concretely start implementing those. Again, I think the idea is that over as time goes on, we basically review this on a regular basis to see where things stand and if it's really indeed improving the efficiency and effectiveness of the PDP.
So thanks, Marika. I think what you've hopefully heard in our public meeting is a good faith attempt to summarize where, within the constraints of the existing processes and rules, how we might improve the efficiency and effectiveness of the PDP, and essentially a proposal to kick off with one or more of these on a trial basis for later review. So really the question, I think, for us is about what way forward. And we don't necessarily have to conclude that now. We can conclude it at our December meeting. But I'd like to get some guidance, because this has been with us for a couple of meetings now, and there is a real opportunity to start perhaps in the new calendar year with implementing one or more of these on a trial basis. And so it's really the mechanics of how we get from proposal to action that would be very helpful to hear from any of you on, either now or in the near future, such that we can really make that decision on one or more of these items as soon as possible, and ideally no later than our December meeting. Any comments, questions, or input? I've got Maria, Alan. Go ahead, Maria.
Thanks, Jonathan, and thanks, Marika. First of all, I want to say the Marika, as staff, has done a terrific job in taking on comments, you know, personally that I've made to this, and that other people have made going forward to sort of to meet some of the concerns and anxieties that we have about the staff role and the community member role. So I appreciate that very much. On working group membership and whether we should look again at the notion of having defined or at least minimal representation from each stakeholder group, I think we probably should, because it, in a way, it's sort of going back to things we've done before, when in the previous task force model there was always representation from each stakeholder group, and you know, while this isn't simply a numbers game and we're looking for consensus, I think we do have issues when not every constituency or stakeholder group can put the same number of people on the same working group all of the time, so we can find ourselves having proportional inequalities on those groups, and you know, and a lack of certainly a less loud voice or ability to really focus and drive through to conclusions together. I also appreciate Marika taking on proactively some of the ATRT2 recommendations, both for looking at facilitators and for having more face-to-face meetings. And it would be terrific if, instead of having to wait for the ATRT2 process to come to an end, if staff could begin to look at, you know, what the budget feasibility would be for those. And I think if we were to do that, I think the ATRT2 recommendations are that the community, in this case the GNSO, should also begin to think about, well, when do we use facilitators and how? So I think that's something we might consider taking on board. And finally, the other topic that the ATRT2 report does pick up, which staff hasn't been able to hear, is the over-representation in working groups of particularly of people who are able to be supported by professional bodies, by their employers and others. So I think that is something that we should somehow continue to look at and try and think about how we could redress the balance so that we make sure all voices on working groups can make themselves easily heard. Thanks.
Thanks, Maria. Alan?
Yeah, two things. On the mandatory participation,
that has a smell of slave labor or forced labor, and I think at best it will get someone to sign up for the mailing list and not participate. But what I would suspect might be useful is that if a group is not participating, it shouldn't just be the absence of volunteers, but the leadership of that group should say, yes, we are not participating. You know, it's a conscious decision as opposed to a tacit one. And I think that's an important, there's an important message that goes along with it. I'll add one more idea that I haven't heard mentioned before, and it came up yesterday in an ATRT meeting. And the discussion matter was, how do you get people to actually volunteer for these things since the subject matter is so complex? And the idea was essentially a subject matter webinar that either precedes or goes along with the call for participants, to try to attract people in and then tell them what it's about instead of some terse title which has very little meaning to people.
Thanks, Alan. Good suggestion. I know I've got Thomas in the queue, but Marika wants to respond first.
Yeah, it isn't, Rick. On the participation, I think indeed it's more the second thing you said. It would be more about making sure that someone is on the mailing list. You know, ideally, they participate in calls, but at least that they are following the discussions and have a kind of responsibility within their groups to provide regular updates. And you know, they don't necessarily need to be on calls for that, but at least that there is someone there that takes on responsibility for each group to make sure that they can flag or that groups are up to date. So when it comes to the council, they can't really say like, oh, we had no idea, we didn't know what was going on. And I think your suggestion on the webinar, I think, is a fantastic idea. I think we definitely should consider that on, for example, now translation, transliteration, I think is a really good one, which is a relatively complex issue. So indeed, in combination with the call for volunteers, having a call where we actually just explain what it is about and what the group is expected to address, and that may help people decide as well whether or not they want to actually join that or whether they consider themselves to stay far away from it.
Thomas, John.
Thanks, Jonathan. I guess there might be instances where certain groups do not wish to participate actively because it's really nothing that they can add to. For example, the IRTP is something which is very technical, so not every group might have a vital interest in contributing to those discussions, and I would respect that. Nonetheless, I guess it becomes a nuisance and is detrimental to the policy development process as such if such a group that was silent during the working group's work then actually stepped up and asked for a deferral when the council wants to hear the motion. So I think that one might use as a sanction, so to speak, a mechanism whereby if you don't participate, you forfeit your right to ask for a deferral, or we would authorize the council chair to exercise its discretion when it comes to requests for deferrals based on the attendance in the respective groups.
Thanks, Thomas. John Fulker, and then I'm going to cut the queue at that point. So I've got John and Fulker.
This is John Berard, business constituency. I like Alan's suggestion because it begins to get at the notion of accountability that I think would be well to invest into the working group set of activities. I certainly appreciate as well Thomas's offer of a stick. I suspect that there probably should be a carrot as well. And it might be that we could take advantage of ICANN's overall continued investment in technology and perhaps find a way to use a little of that to support the working groups. But a big part of the working group is in the issue report. And so when we're talking about a webinar, we're talking about a grounding in what the working group is going to be discussing. The issue report becomes an essential, essentially the source code for the program that the working group will create. And so maybe we should be thinking about how the nature of the issue report can affect the effort of the working group.
Fulker.
I think there are a lot of valuable contributions and proposals in this in the table, and I think we should pursue and analyze them. However, I do not think, for example, that required or mandatory participation is possible. Whatever the case may be, the number of volunteers in each stakeholder groups is limited, regretfully, and sometimes resources are stretched as far, very far as it is, requiring a participant who might not even be voluntarily there, just present because he was assigned to that, having to take time out of his workday, might not be conducive to the proper work of the working group and might even be counterproductive. The proposal that Thomas raised, I also don't think that that is workable if a stakeholder group did not participate in the working group to forfeit the right to deferral, because the right for deferral is not just because of participation in the working group. It may also be just a lack of time between the publication of the report and the possibility to discuss the report in the stakeholder group itself. So, or maybe just because of a discussion is still ongoing because it's a contentious subject. So a deferral is a valuable tool to ensure that every issue is properly discussed by each stakeholder group, and therefore eliminating that just because participation resources were not there when the working group was active, I feel that that would be going too far.
Thanks, Volker. Thanks all of you who contributed to the discussion. I think it's a useful discussion to have. We may need to pick this up in the wrap-up session. I'm very keen to bring one or more of these items to a conclusion so that we can move it forward. I think what we need to do is agree on a method that will allow us to pick off one or more of these items to begin to experiment with the improvements. I can understand that there are varying tweaks and suggestions that have been made. So I think let's review what's been said in this session, pick it up in the wrap-up, and see if we're still in a position to undertake some work on one or more of these in the new year. We have a relatively short amount of time left. We have item 7 on the agenda, and we put in items 8 and 9, which were options if time permitted. We can expect motions relating to items 8 and 9 to come up in December, so I'll draw your attention to them, but I don't think we will have time to cover them. I think in the meantime we will cover item 7, which deals with prospective review of the GNSO. This is the board-initiated review, which is within the remit of the Structural Improvements Committee of the board. We did meet with the board during the course of the weekend sessions and had the opportunity to hear from Ray Polzak, who heads up the Structural Improvements Committee. We have already in place a set of volunteers to potentially help with this effort, and included in that volunteer group is a group leader in the form of Jennifer Wolfe. And so Jennifer and I picked this up and had the opportunity to meet with Ray Polzak this morning, and he gave us a good indication of his thinking, which I'll just remind you, all councillors should have seen his draft paper, and if you haven't seen it, either search the list for it and have a look on the thinking of where the framework that the Structural Improvement Committee, where it's going and where they're thinking of heading and how that might be applied to the GNSO. I'm wondering if we have a time for a very brief input from Rob, but I think maybe it's best we just hear an update from Jennifer, since we had the opportunity to hear from Rob during the weekend sessions, and then this is something which we will pick up in the weeks and months to come. So Jennifer, if you're okay, I think it'd be good to give the council and the community, the GNSO and attendees, some update on our session with Ray and where this looks like it might be heading.
Thank you, Jonathan. Yes, we had the opportunity to meet with Ray actually earlier today and have a deeper conversation about the board's approach to the review, specifically the framework. which really takes the form of more of a typical type of audit that you might expect that is very metric-driven, very data-driven. And so the discussion that we had concluded with the idea that we would form a committee or a task force, if you will, from the GNSO to collaborate with the board review so that we can understand the framework that's being utilized and at the same time build our own framework for a self-review, with the goal being that we would run a self-review concurrent with the board review so that we can have data and metrics that parallel one another so that we can actually have good data to compare and also contribute to the process of the review. So that's where we are. I don't think the time frame has been officially determined with regard to the review. So at this point, we are simply collaborating, communicating, understanding what's happening, and we'll be working to build a plan as we know more about the definitive time frame.
Thanks, Jennifer. And I think there's clearly an opportunity for the council to, within this framework, review the processes that are within its purview, in particular the policy development processes. And so that's a real tangible, over and above collaborating with the tools and structure of the review process as the Structure Improvements Committee develops their work. There is also an opportunity for us to commence work on that. Quite how that fits with the review of the GNSO, which typically might be more diversified and within the stakeholder groups and constituency themselves, has yet to be determined, and that may well be something for further discussion. Is there anything that the councillors or anyone in the room would like to add, comment, question in relation to this work? Zahid.
Thank you. I think it's a great idea that we're also going to be doing something which is similar to this self-review, but I've heard the word audit, which I like. My only concern or suggestion would be that the scope of this audit, as it's being described at the moment, also include, as you would in a self-review, looking at what improvements can be made to the structure, to the council at the moment, and I know we need to then think about going to the structure. So I just wanted to make sure that it's just not just an audit of seeing that, but also maybe with recommendations that might be helpful. Thank you.
Yeah, and just, I don't know if, Jennifer, you want to comment, but just to explain that, I mean, we can expect to see coming out of the work of the structural improvement of the... We all battle with this SIC and SCI, the Structural Improvements Committee of the Board. We can expect to see coming out of their work quite a comprehensive framework and description of the methodology. And through that, I think it'll become amply clear what the opportunities for both measuring the metrics and performance of the organization and structures and processes to be audited, as well as the potential for recommended change in future. And I think Jen is being modest, but I think she's it's clear to me from her background that she's very well qualified to cooperate with and work with within this kind of approach. So it's something we should be in good shape to work on. Seeing no other comments or questions on this item, I think we'll, given the time at 8 minutes before the hour and our requirement to finish and wrap up in this room by no later than the top of the hour, I think we'll skip items 8 and 9, as I said, and move on to item 10, which gives us an opportunity to thank our outgoing councillors, and that's quite a sizable list this time for a variety of reasons, including a recent surprise addition. All of these councillors, let me just mention, it's Lanray Ajay, who's on the phone, our non-com appointee, Mason Cole, who served both as a registrar, stakeholder group representative and vice chair, Zahid Jamil from the business constituency, Wolf Ulrich, who has served as a CSG rep, ISPC constituency rep, I guess, and vice chair of the council. I should say that it reminds me of that, I think it's an Oscar Wilde quote, to lose one parent can be considered an accident, to lose two is unfortunate, and I think we could say that of the vice chairs of the council. To lose one is an accident, to lose two at one time is not perfect, but we do have some very well qualified candidates coming up. But, you know, particular thanks to all of those councillors, Joy Lidicote from the NCSG, Jeff Newman, who I know many of you will know has put in a substantial performance as a councillor and as a representative of the registry stakeholder group, and Wendy Seltzer from the non-commercial stakeholders group. It's difficult to pick out any particular one. I think I'd just like to thank particularly the vice chairs and Wolf Ulrich Knobben on this particular instance for all of his tremendous effort in going into the organization, which is a key responsibility of the vice chairs. But all of these councillors will know that the effort and contribution that you have to make is not insubstantial for a whole lot of reasons, both in volume of work, in extraordinary times of day, huge commitment on the weekend before the ICANN meeting, right through the ICANN meeting. And so I think a real warm vote of thanks to all of these outgoing councillors from all of us here within the council and within the GNSO as a whole. So I hope you'll join me in giving them a very heartfelt round of applause in thanks. So each of those councillors will have received a small gift of appreciation that has been distributed by our amply capable and well-qualified support, Glen Saint-Géry. There's one other item I'd like to cover under the AOB before I see if there's anything else that anyone would like to add to the AOB. And that is to recognise, since we're in the thanks and award season, the participation of some within the GNSO who have been at many, many ICANN meetings. And so what we have here is a recognition of a number of participants who have been at a number of meetings. I'm going to read them out in no particular order, but they're listed on my list in alphabetical order. That's Adrian Kinderis, who has been a participant in 40 or more ICANN meetings. Tony Harris, who has been himself a participant in 40 or more. David Taylor, in the 30 to 39. James Seng, 40 or more. Jean-Christophe Veen, 30 to 39. Ken Stubbs, 40 or more. Michael Heller, 30 to 39. Nick Wood, 30 to 39. Steve Metalitz, 30 or more. Teresa Sobrevela, 30 or more. And Mason Cole, 30 or more. So congratulations to those of all of you for your long service to the ICANN community. We should really recognize that there are some lapel pins here for those of you that are in the room with a 40 or more or a 30 or more, so please come up to me afterwards and I'll be very happy to provide you with those. And I think we could also join together in a round of applause for the tremendous contribution from all of you. As an outgoing councillor. And last but not least, for some reason, under item 10, I think because he has gone to even greater responsibilities, that we forgot the departing Wolfgang Kleinwächter, who those of you may well recall has been, through the NomCom process, placed on the ICANN board. And that was a recent announcement that came just prior to this meeting. So I think Wolfgang is possibly already immersed in board activities, but I should like to go on record as recording his not insubstantial contribution, and also that's clearly been recognized by the NomCom in putting Wolfgang on the ICANN board. So thanks very much to Wolfgang as well. Are there any other items that anyone would like to raise under any other business before we bring this part of the meeting and this first part of the meeting to a close? Right, well, that brings the formal proceedings to a close. Thank you once again to the outgoing councillors for all of your tremendous work and service to the community, and those of you, and we'll be welcoming the new councillors to the council in our follow-on meeting, which take place just a few minutes from now. Thank you. We can stop the recording.